All right, take your Bibles and go to 1 Peter chapter 4. And the last hour we did mostly doing a review on the issue of the gifts. But we want to pick up in chapter 4, and I think we can finish this tonight. Peter just, he just gets with it. He gets on a roll about verse 7, in which he just lists some good old principles for living the Christian life. He says in verse 7, the end of all things is near at hand. Therefore, be of sound judgment, sober spirit for the purpose of prayer. Be of sound judgment and sober. Not intoxicated spiritually, but sober for the purpose of prayer. By the way, what does he mean? We didn't talk about this last week. We looked at this verse, but I didn't address this. The end of all things is at hand. We're in the last dispensation. And then he said, wait a minute, what about the tribulation and the kingdom and blah, blah, blah? Well, we are in the last period of the push of reaching the Gentile world. The last push before the tribulation falls, which is a judgment, and then the dispensation of the reign of Christ. So it's this period that God is reaching the world. Peter did not know how long that would last. For him to say the end of all things is at hand, in his mind, we are in that last period. He did not know how long this was going to last. It doesn't matter. What's our job right now? To walk about with sound judgment and to have as our purpose of a prayer. Above all, keep fervent in your love, be zealous in your love for one another, because love covers a multitude of sins. I mentioned to you that idea of love covering a multitude of sins is in Proverbs about 8 times. And I'll explain what Peter means, but I think it's very important. I call this this plays on the principle of, or the practice that we, all of us can do, is because we're fleshly, the did you know syndrome. Did you know what happened to them? Did you know what she did? Did you know what happened to them? I have to tell you so we can pray more informed. I have to tell you their problems and their sins and their difficulties. The doctrine of the did you know. Now, don't get this wrong. If there is a, it's not a doctrine, I should use that word. Peter's point and the Proverbs point is this. Let's say someone in the body is sinning and affecting the body. Then Elder Gant, myself, or John Pappas would go and talk to them. And you could come say, look, they're self-destructing. They're self-destructing. They need help. That's not what this is about. This is about looking in someone's life. And they've had struggles. And they've had problems. And maybe it goes back 5 or 10 years. And then the did you know? Did you know? Did you hear? And this is what he's talking about. That love covers those sins of the past. If I really love that person, I'm not going to sit here and air his dirty laundry out with you. Okay? And this is mentioned about 8 times in the book of Proverbs. Go back to Proverbs chapter. In fact, write these down. Be good exercise. Proverbs 10:12. This is not as clear what I'm saying, but it's one of the verses. Proverbs 10:12. Hatred stirs up strife, but love covers all transgressions. If I love you, I'm not going to go and dig up and tell somebody, did you know what they did 5 years ago or 10 years ago or whatever? And when people come to this church, we don't sit and ask where you've been, what you've done in your life, it's good, bad, different. You are welcome. And hey, everybody deserves a time, a chance to start up and keep moving. Keep going. Walk past our sins and our problems. Write down to Proverbs 10:12, then write down 13:17. 13:17, Proverbs 13:17. I'm not sure this is the best one. Well, we can read it anyway. It's related, I guess. A wicked messenger falls into adversity. A faithful envoy brings healing. If someone is faithful and they're good, they will bring healing, not adversity. They'll bring healing and not adversity. That's not the best one. Look at verse 9. Excuse me. I just goofed. Erase that. Go back to Proverbs 10:12. And also 10:13. I just misread my note. 10:12. Well, that's not either. So scratch it all. Scratch it all. Shall we turn off the recorder and just start all over again?
Scratch 13.
What's that?
Scratch 13 or the whole?
Yeah, scratch 13. Just scratch 13. I had written 10:13 down. Just scratch it all. All right, now we'll get into sync. 17:9. Proverbs 17:9. 17:9. He who covers a transgression seeks love, but he who repeats a matter separates intimate friends. Well, that goes right to the heart, doesn't it? He who covers a transgression seeks love. It doesn't mean to cover it in the sense of we don't want to deal with it. But the idea, if once the transgression is done and the person's repented, the person's gone on, then you cover it and you just go on. You just go on. He who repeats a matter, and it's explained in the second part of verse 9 better. He who repeats a matter, it's the do you know deal. Okay, let me tell you. Do you know? He repeats a matter, separates intimate friends. Then write down 18:8. 18:8. And boy, I can feel 18:8 because my flesh loves to do what 18:8 does, says. The word of a whisper are like dainty morsels. They go down into the innermost parts of the body. Tell me the juicy stuff. It tastes so good. It tastes so good for you to tell me the juicy morsels. It's like eating a piece of candy. I want to know. Tell me. Look at 19:11. 19:11. A man's discretion makes him slow to anger, and it is his glory to overlook a transgression. To overlook a transgression. That doesn't mean to be going along with sin, but every one of us limps. And if I jumped on you every time you sinned, or you jumped on me every time I sinned, man, we'd all be beaten up, wouldn't we? Sometimes you have to go on. You have to move past. You and I are living out imperfections. We're living out immaturities and imperfections. And so we pack up and we move on. Look at 25:9. Don't get me wrong. If there's destruction from sin, it has to be handled, dealt with. I'm not talking about that. 25:9. Argue your case with your neighbor and don't reveal the secret of another. You got a dispute with somebody, don't make it universal. Stick with them. Deal with them.
Told me that you did this or you said that, or
yeah,
bring it in a third party.
That's right. That's where you get on the phone and just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. If you got a war with somebody, then keep the war with them. Okay? Now let me put a little asterisk here, because sometimes you can be suffering in a problem, a difficulty, and you may come and you may every week talk to me, and I know the Lotans, they have issues and problems that they're dealing with where they're worshiping, and they'll come and I try to help them on Monday nights to give them some advice. That's not the same thing either. They're not coming to gossip. They're coming because they need help. And the point of these verses is don't just pick up the phone and go, That's the point of these verses. Look at 26:20. 26:20. For lack of wood, the fire goes out. And where there is no whisper, contentions quiet down. Quit throwing the wood on the fire. You're going to really get a blaze going, okay? And where there is no whisper, no gossip, and guess what? Contentions quiet down. I've made a practice in most of my ministry, and can happen differently, but if people are going at it in the congregation sometimes, I will not jump in unless they call me and ask me, will you jump in and mediate? I'll let them try to work it out. Now, sometimes if it's getting destructive, somebody's getting hurt, somebody's you know, crying and walking, and they're maligned, then I would jump in. Only a couple of times the last 20 years have I went into a situation and made a judgment. But I generally let people work it out. If they can't work it out, and what happens, this is good practice for Christians who are at war with each other, to learn to apply the principles of forgiveness. The principles of forgiveness and the principles of getting up and going on. Get up and go on. Let's get on past this. Let's get on down the road. Okay? All right, those little verses that come from this verse here in Peter, and I thought you'd like the little list, and I think it's a good little list. 26, what, did you see another one?
Chapter 26.
Yeah, 26, 22, there you go, there's another one. The words of a whisper are, don't we read that one, is it? Or it's mentioned twice, this one must be mentioned twice. The words of a whisper are like dainty morsels, they go down to the innermost parts of the body. I think it's mentioned twice.
Now,
we read it somewhere else, huh?
When I was growing up, Mama had a little different take on love covers a multitude of sins. She
yes.
Close hide a multitude of sins,
Kevin.
Close hide a multitude of sins.
Amnesia. She reminds me of things I said. I don't remember.
This is the problem of coming to Bible study with your daughter, you see. Yeah. She can dig up. All right, go back to 1 Peter 4. Let's go back to 1 Peter 4. Verse 9. Be hospitable one to another without complaint against each other. As each one has received a gift, we read this earlier, employ it, whether it's serving, whether it's speaking, whether serving. If you have a gift of strength, then do it properly, blah, 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 blah. So that in all things God might be glorified. God might be glorified. Here's the purpose. That God might be glorified through Jesus Christ, to whom belongs the glory and dominion forever and ever. Amen. Beloved, do not be surprised, and we read this last week, I believe, at the fiery ordeal among you, which comes upon you for testing, as though some strange thing has happened to you. Now, that's hard. Because when things hit us, we say, oh, why did I deserve this? Where did this come from? Well, Peter says, don't be surprised. But to the degree that you share the sufferings of Christ, keep on rejoicing so that also at the revelation of His glory, you may rejoice with exultation. It's all going somewhere to His exaltation. It's all we're moving to the day when Jesus Christ, our Savior, will receive full glory. And the curtain will be pulled back. That's where we're going. Meanwhile, we're in this struggle. And by the way, you and I haven't even started to suffer like the early church suffered. Well, yeah, I mean, we don't know what suffering is. These people suffered. Verse 14, if you revile for the name of Christ, you're blessed because of the Spirit of glory and God rests upon you. You're reviled for, I think he's saying, you're reviled for a purpose. In God's mysterious purpose. He's causing you to be reviled. He's working in this reviling that comes against you. If you're suffering for Him, He's working in it. But by no means let any of you suffer as a murderer, or a thief, or evildoer, or a troublesome meddler. I can't say, "Oh God, I'm suffering," if I brought it on myself and I'm a criminal and I'm doing things that are evil. I can't say, "Boy, I'm suffering for Jesus." I can't say that. If I am an evildoer. But if anyone suffers as a Christian, let him not feel ashamed, but in that name let him glorify God. In the name of Christ, let him glorify God. For it's time for judgment to begin with the household of God. That's interesting. Notice this. Hey, can Christians do wrong? Yes. That's what he just said. And where does judgment start? If I can do wrong, or if I do wrong, then hey, don't sit here and throw rocks at the lost. If I'm doing wrong, judgment starts in the household. It starts with me. I need to be judged. And if it begins with us first, what will be the outcome for those who do not obey the gospel of God? What about the lost? Their judgment. If we're going to be judged, what about them? Mercy. And if it is with difficulty that the righteous is saved, what will become of the godless man and the sinner? It took a lot for God to save us. to save me, what's going to happen to the lost? If God had to do a great work of mercy to save me, what is going to become of them? Mercy. Therefore, let those who also who suffer according to the will of God entrust their souls to a faithful Creator in doing what is right. I love that verse. This is a sovereignty verse. Look at it again. Those who suffer according to the will of God. Now that would be suffering persecution for the sake of Christ. God put people in the place of suffering. His will put them. God used them as martyrs. Follow. You know what the word martyr means? It means witness. The word witness means martyr. You think of a martyr as a Christian who dies for his faith, but you can also say he is witnessing for his faith. He's witnessing for his faith. He's being killed for his faith. For his faith. Because of his faith. And as I'm speaking tonight, right now, there are hundreds of Christians who will die around this world for the sake of Christ. You and I will never see them until glory. And you and I don't even know what persecution and death for Christ's sake is. And God has brought them to death for a reason. They are suffering according to the will of God. And if that happens to you, look what he says. Entrust your souls to a faithful Creator. He knows what he's doing. Look what he says. He knows what he's doing. He's doing what is right. He knows what he's doing. If God brings suffering on the Christian, he knows what he's doing. He knows what he's doing. Years ago, I went behind the Iron Curtain for Zobel Levitt to do a research project. Went to Hungary, Romania. I saw people suffering. I can't believe how they were suffering for Christ's sake. That was before the Iron Curtain was dissolved. It was touch and go. It was touch and go. And I told you the story about leaving the last checkpoint coming out of Romania. And I had stuffed under my coat a big wad of notes that I had taken. And they had us get out of the car, and boy, they were going over the hoods of the car. They were going in the doors. They were looking for any kind of contraband that we'd be taking out of Romania. And I stepped out of the car, and these guards were going all over this car. And I looked down, and those notes were slipping out of my coat. They were coming out. They were 2 inches thick, handwritten notes. And they were blasting communism and all, you know, and they're slipping out of my coat. And I started to say, okay, what am I going to do? This guy's got guns on him. I looked over, there's a guardhouse about 20 feet away, and there's two guards in there. They were watching television. And I said, if I go right among them, they won't pay attention to me. So I walked in this little guardhouse, and they had a restroom. I went in the restroom and tried to shove the notes back up, but it was a big wad sticking up like this out of my coat. My coat was all bulged out. And so I walked over to where they were watching television, stood right by them. So they did like this, and went back to the television. Didn't pay attention to me. And if I'd made myself conspicuous, I still might be in some Romanian jail, you know, looking out behind the bars. But I figured if I went among them, they wouldn't see me. That's what I did so I wouldn't get caught. But I saw people suffering for the sake of Christ. I had one guy get in the car with me. And he said, drive me around the block. He was a Christian. He said, now tell me the American Constitution and the preamble. My teacher in junior high made me memorize the preamble of the Constitution. And I was going around the corner telling him the preamble. He was writing it down. He'd never heard such things about freedom before. These people were suffering. Suffering. But notice, they're suffering according to the will of God. God was using their suffering for purposes that you and I can't imagine. And God has not caused me by his will to suffer for the sake of Christ. It might happen yet. It's not over. The story's not over.
May come to us.
You bet.
Osama bin Laden in his message said the West must convert to
Islam. The West must convert to Islam, bin Laden said. And by the way, most of the news people didn't catch that. Oh, they barely mentioned it. They don't realize how big that is. And by the way, every Muslim believes that. Even though they're not going to throw a bomb through our window, they still believe they must conquer the world for sake of Allah. And however that can be done, they, you know, that's fine. We got 5 minutes. Any quick questions on anything we've done tonight? 5 minutes. This is your chance. This is it. Okay, we'll do a test. Duke.
I'm ready.
Let's play the game. Duke can take it. What do you all think Duke's gift is?
Listening.
Goodness?
Mercy.
Mercy? Mercy, yeah, I would say that.
Patience.
Patience, I'm not sure that's a gift, but we'll give it to him anyway.
Look how red he is. He's blushing.
I think that there's a hospitality.
There's a gift of hospitality. There's a gift of hospitality.
He's very welcoming, and there's not, I don't think there's ever been a person that's walked through that door that hasn't just, I mean, it's just like his brother, come on in.
Right.
Put your hand up there with mine.
Right.
Patience is a fruit of the Spirit, not a gift.
Yeah, that's not a gift. Patience is, but hospitality is, and so that's one of the gifts. So you,
and mercy.
I would, and mercy, yes.
Well,
if you knew who he worked for, you'd say he had all three of them.
She's thinking patience because he has to live with me.
All right, should we pick on somebody else? I'm scared to because I knew I could pick on Duke, but I don't want anybody to get on the phone tonight, you know, and chew
me up. Did you know?
Yeah, did you know? Did you know? Did you know? All right, let's reverse this. We've got 4 minutes. What do you think maybe your gift is?
It's faithfulness again.
No. Well, faith is. Faith, that is a special dose of faith.
Ronnie's
a very steady, absolutely. That could certainly fit Ronnie, absolutely. Yeah. Steady as a rock. Well, we say that. Dr. Ryrie used to say that. It keeps talking about the gift as he gave to each one, as if it's only one. But I don't see that there's a problem with saying there's more than one. I don't think it's a problem.
Well, because Ronnie may have more than just one.
Yeah, right. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. But notice that when you're talking about him or talking about you,
yeah.
It comes to mind what is maybe the first inclination that we would have, or first impression that we would have. But yeah, somebody can have the other gifts too. Absolutely. I think it's possible. Yes.
Could it be that they could also, as God wills, change? One person could have one gift?
Paul doesn't say it, but I don't see that there's a problem. I don't see the problem that it's not impossible. None possible?
Maybe it's as the body needs a gift.
Right.
Maybe it's not available. I mean, we may not have them all, like you said.
Yeah.
But maybe if there was a need, then that the Lord would supply.
That's not impossible. Paul doesn't tell us everything that we could know about the issue. He doesn't give us everything. Yeah. Yes, Ronnie?
I enjoy teaching elementary age boys.
Yes.
I can seem to connect with them. When I tried to teach an adult class, I fell flat on my back.
Okay, all right. So you may have the gift of teaching young people. Seriously, absolutely. Absolutely. And that is a gift that, not everybody can have.
And I don't have the patience I used to have.
And by the way, I think that's another indicator of a gift. Does it really fit? If you're having to really just go nuts and work it, then maybe that's not a gift. Maybe it's a desire to do something. It's a desire because everybody can teach, but do you have the gift of teaching? And don't hold back. Don't say, I don't think I got the gift to teach, therefore I shouldn't. No, you can still teach. But there are people that have these special abilities in these areas for the sake of the common good. Remember, it's for the body, for the common good.
I have a question.
Uh-huh.
Have you ever heard of a pastor or a teacher, and they are deadly dull? They're horrible. They're brilliant. They're smart. I'm sorry. I just can't believe God gives somebody a gift that's going to just bore them to tears. If they can't, they, you know, they get up and teach. I'm not talking about you.
I started to get a complex there when you were.
No. I mean, you know, these people, they just drone on and on, and no inflection in their voice, and you're going, they think their gift is teaching. It's horrid. I mean, you can't even listen for because there's a war.
Yes.
Are they mistaken?
I think that they are called. I think it's possible that they're called to teach. I mean, God using them, but they don't have that gift of teaching.
Well, should they not teach?
Well, no. See, I think
books.
I think then we're getting into. But I don't think that Paul would say that. Therefore, would it be prohibited? Let me just give you a quick story. I got one minute. He just died, Dr. John Whitmer. In fact, he's writing one of the commentaries. It's going to come out in January, I believe. He wrote part of it. Dr. Whitmer, in fact, he became the librarian at Dallas Seminary. So you can't get more dull than a librarian. And he was a librarian. But he taught theology, and I had an advanced course with him. And bless his heart, just like you're saying.
Painful.
Oh, guys are walking with ropes and hang themselves when he started teaching, because it was terrible. But you know, looking back, let me tell you about the man. He just died. He had the most gracious, sweet spirit about him that I've ever seen in a man. He had a heart as big as this room. He wouldn't hurt a flea. He was gentle. He was kind. He was always friendly. But he couldn't teach out of a wet paper bag. So what did I get from him? Well, I didn't get some great information because he was not a good teacher, but I got his heart, and he had a huge love of people and love of the Lord. Just couldn't be duplicated. Let me tell you one other quick story. This is worth telling. When I was at, well, let's go ahead and we'll close up Peter, and then I'll tell you this little story here.